The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Repairing the Ruins, the 2011 ACCS Annual Conference, copyright 2011. If you have purchased this audio CD, you are free to make multiple copies of it for your own or your school's use. You may not sell copies of this audio or post it on the Internet. If you would like to find out more about the work of ACCS, please visit our website at www.accsedu.org. To order additional talks from this conference, please visit the ACCS website and click on Conferences. Thank you for your support of ACCS.
Well, it looks like it's about time to get started. So I'm impressed that you have taken this opportunity to come here when Vadi's speaking next door. I'm not sure I would have made the same choice, but I'm glad to see you all here. Don't run out, please. I can only take so much. My name is David Goodwin. I'm the headmaster of the Ambrose School in Boise, Idaho. I have spoken at the conference a few years on marketing development and occasionally on recruiting and retaining students. And that seems to be the niche that I have made for myself or that I'm in. So I admittedly know more about that than I do about many other things. And this year when I was talking to Patch about opportunities to speak at the conference, I was contemplating doing something purely academic, but I figured no one would come. So I blended it with some academic stuff we do at our school. So this is kind of a blended. You get a 3-for-1 a little bit in this talk. It's about retaining students. It's about recruiting students. And it's about academic excellence and a technique that we've used for some number of years at the Ambrose School. I want to do a quick disclaimer in that every time I speak at one of these things, somebody in the audience knows more about it than I do, and I run into them afterwards, and then I'm sheepish. So take it for what it's worth. It's my best effort to describe what we do and how we do it at the school, and I'm sure many of you have just as good or better programs. So let's talk a little bit about what a point of excellence is. Before I do, every year people want my slides, so I put them online. They'll be up for a few weeks, so just grab them off our website. The address is right there, theambroschool.org/document/document-library, and then down at the ACCS conference part of that, you'll see this presentation. Now, this presentation, because I figured after a couple of 3 or 4 years speaking here, some of you would get tired of listening to me talk, so I put a few videos in it to try and dress it up a little bit. The videos are not on the website. I don't have nearly enough bandwidth to get them up there. So I may put them on YouTube or something at some point, and maybe you can see them from there. But we do have a pretty extensive video library at our school. Some of them are going up this summer, over the course of the summer. So if you check back around the beginning of the year, we should have a video library up of a lot of this stuff that you'll see today. I had our editors take it down to just a couple of minutes of video. So if you want lengthened video, you can get that online. So did I talk long enough to get everybody to write that down? We'll land on this slide at the end. So first off, what is a point of excellence and why do them? One of the things that we've all noted about classical Christian education is that if we have to sit in our offices and describe it to somebody, it takes us an hour and they have glassed over eyes and they still don't get it. So typically what helps them get it is to experience it. If I talk to them for an hour, they nod nicely. If I put them in the classroom for an hour, they come out going, boy, I wish I could go to school here, right? And yet you can't get very many people to sit in your classroom for an hour. They don't think they have time. It's kind of like conferences like this. You look at my name on the roster and wonder, is he worth going to again? So, you know, it's kind of, are you worth spending an hour on? And that's kind of the situation that we're at. So we came up with these points of excellence kind of by accident, and I want to explain how they work a little bit. I'm going to start out describing 3 reasons to do them. Basically, what a point of excellence is something visible that your school does, so it can be seen by outsiders, that you have invested your time and energy in as a school, as opposed to an individual class or something like that. You'll see some examples today. It needs to be something where what you do is expressed within it. So we're talking like plays, performances, contests, things like that. And we're tapping in, you know, it also works well for development, because a lot of, in development, you have a lot of people in your school when you're doing these kinds of events that maybe grandparents or friends. And so we're going to talk a little bit more about it, but there's three key reasons to do it, and I'm one of those who likes to kill at least two, maybe three birds with one stone. And so that's why I like this approach to marketing the school in a great measure. The first is that it's curricular. One of the things people often see when they see some of our programs is they think, well, how much academic time did you put into that? Is it really worth it? I'd encourage you not to think too small about what education is. Kids learn a lot, and we'll talk about that today, from performances, contests, things like that. A lot of times that may be all they remember out of a given year, or you've built a skill that they'll take with them for life, if it's in drama or something like that. So these things need to draw from your curriculum. They need to reinforce your curriculum ideas. Don't come up with ideas that are just fun to look at. For example, this year this isn't one of the points of excellence I'm going to talk about today, but it's an extension of our music program. We have an orchestra concert in the spring. We could go a couple of different ways on it. We could do an orchestra concert that was fun by putting a lot of pop music into it, or we could really challenge the kids. This year we did Beethoven's Fifth. It's a big challenge for our students given where they're at. So, you know, use your curriculum to really put the stuff in here that's going to be worthwhile. Don't just kind of assume that it's all about the performance. It's really not. It needs to begin with who you are as a school. So it needs to be curricular in some respects. The second benefit is virtue. Students learn a lot from these kinds of things, performance, what have you. If they're little kids, we're going to show you, you'll see a lot more examples of this as we go, but like our Christmas program every year, I'm going to show you about that. Our Christmas program is a work of ingenuity by the staff that does it, because one of the things that, for example, we do is no downtime. You move in and off that stage in such a way that the discipline required of those students to be able to not talk, get out there, get in, get out. They're always coming on stage or off stage with people who are already singing in front of them or behind them. And so that whole process takes self-discipline. You see that virtue trained well. Teaching humility, you'll see some of that today. Finally, the last benefit is what I was talking about, kind of the fact that beauty communicates. One thing that we should not ever fall into the trap of is believing that we can communicate what classical Christian education is solely with words, because the human soul isn't made to understand things through words. It's stories, it's beauty, it's art. That's how we come to know, really know and love things. And if we believe that as classical educators, which I'm sure most of you do, then we need to think that way when we're talking to people. We need to show them what beauty, what's beautiful at our school, not just talk about it. Because knowing something in your head and knowing it in your soul are two different things. And that's what we do with this. So here's a few ideas on how to choose points of excellence. So we have everything from competitions like mock trial to Christmas programs to plays. And I'm going to go through the 5 points of excellence we have going right now. Here's how you should pick one. It should be visible to visitors, should have obvious beauty, should have the accountability of a performance or a contest. So sometimes doing like an art show or something in your hallways with, you know, the kids' art put up, that might be something you could consider, but it's got to be something that helps the students be accountable to the performance. Should be based on an idea coming from classical Christian education, the trivium, history, the arts. I'll explain each of these as we go through them. and it should become a tradition in the school. One thing I've seen at many schools, and we've had the temptation, and this is what really makes distinctively a point of excellence as opposed to just another program that you do at your school, is that points of excellence need to be something that you create a tradition about. So I'm going to talk about all three of these things. I'm going to do a quick sidebar on the one point of excellence we have that breaks these rules, and that's our classroom decor. One thing that parents notice and that makes a difference when we're doing a tour of the school is the way it looks. And if you look like every other school, people will think you're every other school. And so that doesn't mean just go decorate differently so that you look different. It means decorate consistently with classical education. So be careful with primary colors. I mean, I don't want to go very deeply into this. Matt Whitling did an excellent job describing it better than I could yesterday, I think, in his speech. But basically, try and make your classrooms beautiful to an adult as well as to children. And the point isn't because, oh, we want to show it off for adults, not kids, but because adults have a more developed taste of what's beautiful. And when you put up lots of primary colors and cute little posters that, you know, say Jesus loves you with a pithy puppy on it or something like that, what you're doing is you're playing down to the kids. Kids really need to, we need to be cultivating their affections. Every time, every opportunity we get, we need to cultivate the affections of kids. So putting things in the classroom that are beautiful by the standards of the mature adults is probably a good idea. And, you know, we don't do this in everything and all the way. You can find examples of this in our classrooms, but we just try and move that way. Cute kitsch is what I was talking about with kind of the puppy dogs posters. Using great art and children's illustrations. So this first video I'm going to do here, it doesn't have any audio with it. This is just pictures of things that we shot in our hallway. This is a project done by some of the students to commemorate some wall cave paintings. These are some of the decorations we have around. Those are some numbers that we use instead of with birds or something a little more attractive. I had to shoot a lot of this after our school was out, so you're noticing that some stuff is a little sparse. We got out a few weeks ago and I shot this just before we left. That's part of our entryway. Actually, it's the upstairs hallway. And then this is a painting that some of the paintings we have on the walls. There's this fifth grade classroom. She just has a simple row of thematic paintings that she's put up in there. It doesn't have to be expensive. Great art. The beautiful thing about it, it's not copyrighted. You can get it cheap. And the best stuff is cheap. That's rare. And this stuff, you know, that's a mural that we have at our school. So that's a quick little aside that's really outside of this topic, but I just wanted to bring it out because it's one of those points of excellence. If you have excellence in your decor in your building, it is going to make a big impression. I know that you and I, everybody in this room walks in and out of your building 5 times a week at least, and you hang out there all day, so everything is noise to you in the building. Try and walk in sometime and think about how somebody who's never been there will see it. Your impression is going to be driven by what they see first. We have, just as we enter in at our building, there's a kind of an overhang that has "Take every thought captive to Christ" in brass letters on it. And we put that there deliberately, not just because we believe it, but because anybody who walks in that building is either going to love or hate that sign. And if they hate it, I just assume they go back where they came from. And if they love it, then we want them. And so that's why we put it there. So be deliberate in how you hang things in your building and what you put up. So I put the story here because I had to remind myself, in order to make these things interesting and move along, I know this is Friday and it's late, I have to construct this more as a story. It's the best way to describe things. So I'm going to start with the first point of excellence that predates me, really. It's called exordium. Its name comes, of course, from the progymnasmata. It's kind of a first things or introductions, a praise of first things. And we do this once every 2 weeks. K through 6 does it from 7:55 to 8:40, and 7 through 12 does it from 8:45 to 9:30. So we do break the school up into two chunks. This is an assembly. So you're thinking, okay, well, this isn't exactly what I thought about when I thought of point of excellence. But we don't do a chapel as such. We're not a church. So what we do is we have students display through their chants and recitations in the grammar school what they've learned. Each class gets a crack at it twice a year. So if you divide up all of our classes, they each go twice a year, and it's every other week. So that's about how often it comes out. We have the students sit in the front and parents sit in the back. Now, I know this is a detail that may seem a little odd, but the point of this is to show all of the students. Really, it has an internal function of letting the students work as a community. And if you let parents, they will crowd out the front, and then your students will be lost in the background. So we do that. Starts with a proverb call and response. We're going to see a brief video of it here. There's two classes per week that perform, so each one has about 20 minutes. Rarely we have guest speakers, very rarely. And we pair it with our hymn of the month. So every month we have a hymn that we work on all month long, and the two exordiums, they sing it so that they get it down. It's one of their public performances of the hymn. So you'll see a little bit of that, too. Sometimes they're psalms. We have 40 of them that we go through over the course of 4 years in our curriculum because we want students to have a good grammar of hymns and psalms. So this is that's sort of the nature of exordium. The next slide will start the video of it. And then I'll try and describe it. So the students enter in lines. It's pretty much an orderly kind of thing. We hold it in our gym. And they enter to the music. They're often singing when they enter. So we do the singing song.
Come before you and rejoice in your great goodness. Love your neighbor.
Okay, so I'm going to pause it right there, because that little bit was what is a liturgy that we do, a proverb liturgy. These are made up proverbs. They're not actually out of proverbs, but they're based in scripture somewhere. And what they do is Matt Whitling gave us this idea years ago, and we just do it in every one of these at the beginning. There's actions to them. They stand up, they sit down, they spin around, they shake hands, all those sorts of things. So that's kind of the entry to it. It starts out with the hymn. They're singing on the way in, so it's purposeful. You don't have a lot of rumbling, loud noise. So if you understand this, of course, grandparents and parents always come to these, which is kind of a funny thing, right? If you put their kids on display, they'll come. But what they see is classical education at work. And that's the leverage point. You can really make work in these kinds of events. So you've just got to work to make them excellent. I'm sure most of you do some kind of an event like this, but that's why you call them points of excellence, is really focus on getting it down. And like I said, this started in 97 for us, and we've continued it as a tradition constantly. We publish our exordium schedule with our school schedule at the beginning of the year, and God forbid that we ever have to move one of these things, because if we do, every doctor in the school is upset because their schedule won't let them be there, right? So it's a tradition that's really, others besides the doctors, but they seem to have the hardest time with it. So anyway, this is one of the classes that's just reciting. I picked a couple early on here. There's a couple of rather straightforward kind of recitations. And then you get into the School of Rhetoric, where they're doing a little bit more, like the orchestra will be here and some other things. So those are real short clips of some of the things we do. That last one was from the fifth grade, so the upper ones can occasionally do a drama, but mostly we do recitations. And what it helps is that when you tell a grandparent that their kids know the great men of the Middle Ages or this or that, that sounds neat. But when they chant it in front of the grandparents, that's a bigger deal. Incidentally, at the end of every exordium, we have in a room that we have off of our main atrium a coffee with cake and that kind of thing to kind of be able to go talk to the grandparents. And, you know, I always get lots of amazing comments, you know, that was amazing, that kind of thing. So it really has an effect on your community. Here's the upper school. This is one of our orchestra ones. In the secondary, all of the classes get a shot at it. So this is orchestra. So the high school students are allowed to be a bit more creative in what they do. This is a fashion show of great books. It's a little strange, but you'll get the point. So, are there any questions on exordium before I move on to, yes?
How long
they know before school starts. We have the entire exordium schedule published in a back-to-school packet in July. Now, teachers, we try and not make the K-1-2 do exordium in the first three or four first month or so, because it's really hard to get ready for it that fast. But they generally are trying to display a good portfolio of what they've learned so they can come up with something. Yes? Yes. Okay. So the question, as I understand it, was that what we just saw was an exordium that happens every other week, and it's based on the grade level. So, yeah, put simply, every 2 weeks we do an exordium. The first 45 minutes is the grammar school. The second 45 minutes is the high school. They're not in the room at the same time, just for class time's sake. The high school does rhetorically oriented stuff. They don't do chants, obviously, and that's what you saw is more rhetorical stuff. The grammar school does more chants and a little bit of drama. Two classes per exordium go. So you saw a smattering from across our spring lineup this year. We just clipped a bunch of little clips together. Right? Oh, if you're a smaller school, I would run them together. We used to run them together for years. We started these when we had 35 kids in the school total. So it's a tradition at this point. If we were, you can always tell a tradition, because if we get rid of it, I'll get lynched on the back lawn. You know, it's one of those things that it's developed quite a following. But it takes years to build traditions. So you just have to be real consistent and decide what you're going to do. So that one was started before my time. I arrived in 2004. And I saw how much power was being wielded in that exordium. People, you know, grandparents, parents, they were excited about what they were seeing based on what was in that exordium. And so I realized that what we needed to do is reproduce some traditions like that in the school that would cast a wider vision in a broader group. So we started with a traditional Christmas concert. And what happened here was we always had had a Christmas concert, probably much like most schools. You know, it was done at a church. The kids, you know, it was like, took 5 minutes to get the kids on the stage, 5 minutes to get the kids off the stage, and you get one song, and then, you know, so the only people who came were the handful of parents and grandparents who could tolerate it. And then they'd leave after their kids were done. And so when I saw that, I thought, you know, we have an opportunity to serve our community. One of the missions I think we all should have as classical Christian educators is to be in our communities and be a service and a blessing to our communities. We have a lot to offer them, and so one of the things that I kept hearing from people that I knew in the community was that there's really no source for really traditional Christmas music. What there was out there, you know, was a lot of Holly Jolly Christmas and that kind of stuff, but there was no church. Our town doesn't have a lot of high church in it, so there was no opportunity for the community to get this. And it's something kids can do beautifully, right? I'm not going to get kids to paint in an impressionistic format that people would actually pay money for. But kids can actually sing like boys choirs do, in a sense that people will want to come. So we started out with a goal to minister to the community, and it was a long-term goal. We wanted within 5 years a substantial number of people not connected to kids in the program coming. So in this 2010, which is this last Christmas, we had about 400 musicians involved in this. There were about 1,400 people who came, and that's we have about, if you add all grandparents and everything together, about 600, 700 parents and grandparents who came. So almost half of our current audience on this is from the community. There are people, you know, just all kinds of people, all kinds of walks of life. I'm surprised at the number of people who stop me during the year and say, "Hey, I saw your Christmas concert." It's been more this year because we televised the event. And so on Christmas Eve, it was televised, and what you're going to see are bits of the televised portion. But it didn't build up overnight. It took us 7 years to do this. And then I'm going to tell you a bit how we did it. But we have an orchestra, chime choir. You'll see all of these as we go through. So I guess I'll go ahead and start it here. There were a lot of different parts in that. That Hallelujah chorus we do every year at the end. That's part of the tradition, part of building a tradition. You can see, incidentally, both of these are on YouTube. The Hallelujah chorus and some of the solos from this show are on YouTube. So if you went to our website or went out there and searched on Ambrose, probably Ambrose Christmas Concert, you'd probably find them in their longer form. I have a few of the CDs or DVDs that were produced when we did the broadcast that anyone who wants to come up afterwards and get them, you can get them. Before I answer any questions, I'm going to shoot through how we do this and how we got there. So what we did is we found a couple of key musicians who really had an eye for traditional classical Christmas music, not given to cutesy stuff. You have to find somebody with ideologies that lie right where yours do. Then we got a program manager. Now, I found my program manager, he's great with kids, and he's an engineer. So he can organize people on and off that stage fast. I don't know if you noticed, but sometimes they're singing when they're coming on to the stage. Sometimes there's a group right, if you notice the soloist, she had a group right behind her. They were going to come on right after her. There is no downtime in this thing. There's not a minute's wait between things. And it's performed. We ran a fairly large, obviously it can hold about 1,500 people, and it's a professional. They do Broadway kind of stuff there. Costs us a couple of $1,000s, but we take donations, and we always make, you know, $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 in excess of what we have got into the program. It costs us probably $10,000 a year to put on, not including the televised part, which is generally free, but sometimes it depends. So you've got to find a program manager and an event coordinator. The event coordinator is typically somebody who's much more oriented towards the details. They've got to make sure that there's a bunch. One of the things we do every year is we buy a bunch of Costco poinsettias. I mean, these things are huge. Everything at Costco is huge, right? So these are king-size poinsettias. We buy about 40 of them and resell them to parents in advance. So they're there anyways, and they take them home with them, and we've got a great set on the stage, and the event coordinator does all that. create tradition and values. We value traditional Christmas music here, and so that's, you know, we try and keep that pretty heavily in the mix. And then, like I said, manage the transitions well. It's taken a long time to build up an orchestra. One of the best things you can do in short order, especially if you're a small school, is chimes. Not bells, chimes. Bells are a lot harder to take care of. Chimes are easier, and they sound kind of mellow, so they work real well as accompaniment instruments. And in the first year we did chimes, we had a chime choir that could play almost as good as the one that we do now. With a good gifted music teacher, they can do them. We get our chimes from Malmark, but there's a bunch of different companies you can get them from. It's a little bit of an investment up front. They're $5,000 or $6,000 for the bass set, but once you're into it, it's a great Christmas thing. It just sounds good. The orchestra's taken quite a few years to put together, but we jump started the orchestra originally with just gifted musicians. We just use a small number of them to do accompaniment. We have about 15 that do accompaniment, whereas we got 40 in our orchestra. The rest that aren't in our honors orchestra, that aren't in the 15, they only play a couple of songs, but the main orchestra accompanies 26 songs, I think they did last year. It takes about an hour and 10 minutes to do this thing, an hour and 15. We also try and keep it to that time frame. So if you can figure 26 songs in an hour and 15 minutes, they're moving on and off there pretty quick. All right, now questions on this one. Yes? We have in the grammar school choir, so we have two grammar school choirs. Every kid in the grammar school is in their general choir, and they have a MAPS pullout. It's just a 45-minute pullout twice a week, and that's all they put into it. There's one dress rehearsal in our gym with taped-off space. That's roughly the size of that stadium on the Thursday prior to the event. Don't practice on the same day as the event or they're dead when they get there. But generally, it's not that much time. It's a couple days a week in music. And then after school, we have a select choir that does all the harmony work with the grammar school. So it's a grammar school select choir. And they practice 2 days a week for an hour after school. And that is where we get most of our the song. Part of what makes this thing great is the music is actually really good, and the way we do that is you can't teach harmonies to grammar school kids in mass, so we use a very small group to fill in the harmonies, and then in the secondary that's 1 day a week that they have choir. Yes. Yes, usually the program has a theme, and so it's followed through. There's usually a scripture reading or something. That's all been cut out of this brief one, but you'll see some of it in here. In fact, two of the YouTube things, what we did this year was we had elements of various first century people talking about the coming of Christ. So there's a soldier, one of them is called Soldier's Child that you can see on the web, and it's a child of a Roman soldier who describes what Christmas was like for them. There's one that's the child of a shepherd. So that, you know, sometimes it's scripture, sometimes we thematically create it like that. But we have to do that, of course, in order to get the kids on and off the stage. You got reading parts going on. So, any other questions? Yes?
The program manager, event
No. Parents. Parent volunteers. The only staff people are the musicians. They're the ones that we hire because it has to stay the same year to year. But, yeah, it's all parents. But we give them a position title and their responsibilities. It's formalized as a position. Any other questions on that one? All right. The next one, mock trial. So this is a little different point of excellence. So after we got Christmas program up and running, we have this little tiny school. Well, we're only a few, maybe 100 students bigger, but I like to think they're a little tiny school in North Idaho called Logos. We have to give them grief somehow because we haven't been able to beat them yet at mock trial. But the effect of strong competition has really created a good camaraderie. We have a party every year between the two schools at our facility in Boise. We're in the capital where they actually hold the competition. If you guys don't have mock trial programs, I can't really go far into that here, but I would strongly encourage you consider it. We started out with a debate and mock trial program. The debate side, we didn't think rhetorically fit classical education very well, so we just refined it to the mock trial, and we focused on it, put a little classroom time into it, put some staff into it, and it's a small number of kids, but at this point in our state, the two people who are regularly in the state finals are Logos and us. We wouldn't have a chance in football against any of the what are called the 5A, the biggest schools in the state, but we are able to beat them at this. And that's not a pride thing. It's just we can be competitive in an area where public schools, any school can compete, and we're able to do so competitively. And the kids really feel like it's a real school when they realize that they actually have some things they can do that show that they can succeed. Yes? No, not the Forensics League. Mock trial is almost always run by the State Bar Association in the state. So you have to go to your state bar, and I'll talk about that briefly. So here's a little bit of it. In fact, we chose to use video of us getting beat against Logos.
I swerved her car straight toward my client, tire screeching. Just passing one thing.
Oh, these are pictures of the crash. That's right.
But in that statement, there is not one place where you ever mentioned that you knew whose bike it was, that you had seen it, or that you had ever ridden it before. Isn't that true?
I didn't mention I drank the Guinness either. I mean, how much details there are put in? I was lying there on the ground and I told Osgood my story.
So, when I heard the screeching noise, I put my glasses on and looked towards the intersection just in time to see the big black Dodge Dakota swerving quickly. It looked as if it had been turning to the left and then suddenly decided to swerve to the right.
But first, if I may, let me show that Jeff Paxton was not negligent and certainly not a proximate cause of his own injuries. Everyone on the defense admitted Alex McMasters saw Jess. Alex McMasters said that she saw Jess before she entered the intersection, after Jess slowed, before she began turning. Your Honor, I ask that you find that Alex McMasters was negligent, and that her negligence was a proximate cause of 100% of the injuries to my client.
So, how do you start one of these, or how did we get this up to become a point of excellence? Again, you do a lot of things at your school, and I'm not just simply saying to do them all this well. You have to pick a few things and do them very well. We typically find a teacher with both systematic and rhetorical skills. You often have attorneys that coach these things, but we have found Chris Schlecht many of you may know him. That was his daughter. One of the kids in there was his daughter who was on the Logos team. He's also not an attorney. So oftentimes a non-attorney is a good coach. You kind of need to get it from your faculty, somebody who can be there and really be with the kids. And you learn it over time. The attorneys have to be there for the technical elements of it. Contact your state bar association. They're probably the ones who run it. And there's a starter kit you can get from Georgia, the Georgia Mock Trial Organization. You can just find that on the web. And all of these things, the key is, it's kind of like the generational nature of being classical Christian educators. Don't expect to be great quickly. I think we didn't even win until 3 or 4 years in. We've been doing it about, we haven't lost anybody but Logos in the last 4 years. But before that, we lost an awful lot. And it just takes time to build the program. You have to have patience. And that's why these points of excellence, you got to stick to it. And these don't have quite as, you know, mock trial doesn't quite have the visibility of our Christmas program. So I'm trying to spread across the, you know, the various types of points of excellence that we use. So anyway, are there any questions on mock trial? Yeah. So the question was, does mock trial do as well as debate for classical Christian schools? I have a strong opinion on this, so I will state it, and you can take it or leave it. I do not think debate is classical in whatsoever. Lincoln Douglas a little bit, but the bulk of policy debate is fact-throwing. And when you can buy an entire set of cards out on the Internet for whatever the topic is for the year, and then it's really a matter... often we come up in mock trial against debate teams, and they're not easy to beat, but they're very aggressive, and so we manage to look nice. We look winsome against them because debaters are trained to throw facts hard and fast and to be definitive in what they say. And mock trial, you're trying to persuade jurors who are regular people of a fact or a point. The facts in the case are all given to you in a packet. It's not a fact-throwing exercise. It's how you arrange the facts and how persuasive you can be. The judges in mock trial are almost always real judges or attorneys. They know what goes on in the courtroom. So the thing about mock trial is in my opinion, it's more realistic to rhetoric because it's a form of rhetoric that borrows much of its lineage from rhetoric, and it also is real. You're dealing with real people. It's not, you know, a shouting match between two people over whatever the policy, you know, resolved. Obamacare should be repealed or whatever, you know, they're doing. It's the facts are inane. You heard some of them here. This particular case regarded texting while driving. And so the facts really aren't the point. The point is how eloquent can you be in delivering them. So I'm strongly of the opinion that mock trial is superior to debate for that reason, because it's more like what rhetoric in the world that we live in would be like. But somebody with a debate background could probably argue me under the table on that. So I'll leave it at that. Thanks for the questions. Any other on mock trial? All right. Speech meet. Now, here's a little different one. This is a point of excellence. I know. How many of you do speech meet now? Okay, good. This one has paid huge dividends for us, mostly on the curricular side. This is well developed at our school. We have a rubric that we've used for many years that was developed, the rubric. We have a panel of about 15 judges. They do two to a room. And so we got two judges and a teacher in each room. And so I'll go through a little bit more of that. I've got some of the semifinals shown that I'm going to show you here in a second. Yeah. Age, first through six is when we do. I'm sorry. One through six, I didn't put grade. We're hoping to expand it to seventh and eighth. What I will say about this is we've seen more dividends on this than any of our other points of excellence in terms of the kids' development. And the measure of that is how many outstandings we have every year. And we don't believe that the scale has changed. We're looking at them, and we're just seeing more and more outstandings every year because these kids get used to it. It does a couple of things. It helps train their affections. So we pretty much force their categories into classic literature or great poetry or something. We don't let them just pick anything. And they memorize great poetry, and there's nothing like memorizing poetry to give you a love of it. And so that's been one benefit. Kids who are introverts become, a little more extroverted. Kids who are extroverted learn discipline. It's really all around a good program. So we do it in three rounds. The first round is in the classroom with two of the trained judges and one and the teacher. The teacher's the tiebreaker. They can level three levels. There's superior, good, or superior, excellent, good, and fair. We don't do a poor. That just gets you in trouble with parents. So you get to be fair. So the first round's in the classroom, the second round's in our library. Usually about 35 students make it through. If they score superior, they get in. And then we take the top two in each category, which with four categories means eight kids get into our exordium, and we do a speech meet exordium where each gives their speech. We don't whittle it down beyond that. There's just eight kids who get to give it there. They get a medal, and that's it. So we'll see, these are the libraries.
I guess for all that,
this is the first grader.
The first thing she did was to cry. Told you it was a strange country, a lost princess by George MacDonald.
General Store by Rachel Field. Someday I'm going to have a store with a tinkly bell hung over the door.
Follow the Misty Mountains by J.R.R. Tolkien. Far over the misty mountains cold to dungeons deep in caverns old, we must away our break of day to seek the pale enchanted gold.
The preamble
is a third grader, and this
says,
is a fifth or a sixth grader.
We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility.
Underneath this blue stone lies Robert, Earl of Huntington. No other archer was so good, and people called him Robin Hood. Such outlaws as he and his men will England never see again.
A nameless man amid the crowd that thronged the daily mart, let fall a word of hope and love unstudied from the heart. A whisper from the tumult thrown, a transitory breath, it raised a brother from the dust, it saved a soul from death. O germ, O fount, O word of love, O thought at random cast! Ye were but little at the first, but mighty at the last. The Song of Life by Charles Mackay.
So one thing we do with these two is they're restricted on some of their hand motions and stuff, so he was right on the edge with that one, but we try and keep away from theatrics on speech meet. That's why you just saw most of them just speaking. That kids will naturally get a little excessive on the motions if you aren't careful. So that's, let's see, I think I have how we do this. Hope you have your glasses. So the first thing we did is establish a team with a lead administrator, an event coordinator, and two parents with rhetorical gifts. So as you can tell, these things take teams, every one of them. If you're going to make it a point of excellence, you have to get a team together and get an administrative leader to kind of be on that. Set up categories. Ours are poetry, literary prose, Bible, fable, folklore, and historic oration. And develop a rubric, and then encourage the use of great material. Don't let parents, or try to keep them on great poetry and literature and not some of the, you know, modern stuff. Develop training for about 10 to 15 judges, lay, and this training is a day where, I mean, this is more formalized training. Set up a schedule. You got to do this all on 3 days. You just do it all at once. And then you have to set up a schedule for teachers so they know on this day, by this time, they have to have it memorized. By this time, they have to have practiced it once in front of class. And on this day is the actual day of the speech meet. So if you don't put structure in for teachers like that, they don't know how exactly, especially early on. We got a lot of pushback the first year we did speech meet because we made it mandatory. And that meant all the parents were, well, not all, but many parents were upset because something was mandatory that required their child to be uncomfortable. And many of the teachers were upset because they didn't know exactly how to do it. So you have to provide enough structure for the teachers so they feel comfortable with it. And the parents get over it once they see how it changes their kid over time. So it has worked pretty well that way. The judging levels I mentioned there. And then the timeline I've already shown, and then we don't do winners on the final eight. So any questions on speech meet? Yeah.
First, the rank, what are the
We don't have a time restriction. It's naturally limited because it has to be memorized. Yes. Well, the rubric is published, and the rubric says, one of the levels of the rubric is hand motions were appropriate and not excessive. So because the teachers and the kids know that rule, they learn pretty quick that if they do a lot of theatrics, they don't get on to the next level. So that shuts them down pretty well. Yes. An excerpt of what? On YouTube? No. But like I said, by the end of the summer, we should have a lot of this stuff up. We're putting a lot on the video up by the end of summer. Hopefully, check back at our website. Yes. Yes. Every one of them does it in the classroom round. What's that? Yes. We have a speech meet day. You have the PTF bring in cookies for the volunteers who are tabulating sheets rapidly in whatever room you set them in. It's quite a fun day, actually, because it's like the Final Four, right? Everybody's doing it at once. Papers are being shuffled in and out. Judgments are being made. Last year, my vice principal, who you've seen several times, and I were at the conference here. No, we were at another conference in November when this went on, and that was not a good thing, because all the parents who didn't like the results were now on the case of the volunteers, which wasn't really what we'd intended. But normally it's gotten to be quite a, you have to work to keep the competition civil and godly, because you don't want it to be about showing off or about, building. We just want, superior means that you were blessed and, all of that. We work hard on that with the kids. Yes? Well, that's an excellent question. So the Christmas isn't. We send about, we advertise the Christmas thing. It's on TV, so people see it. It's grown to the capacity of the facility. And like I said, 700-800 people that come aren't even affiliated with school formally. Speech meet, the eight finals at that exordium, that's one of our most packed exordiums because all the grandparents want to come and see this. So that's more of a the way to get grandparents in. Why do we care about grandparents? That's where a lot of money is, and that's a development tool. So some of these serve a development purpose instead of a recruiting purpose. The mock trial, we get a lot of visibility in the paper and the community over it. We have pictures in our mock trial room and stuff that, parents who are visiting see that, and they understand of the program. You have to work a little bit to get these things visible. That answer your question? Yeah. Right. So that's an excellent question. As I said, when we started, we had no facility. We had 35 students. But we didn't do all these. We did one or two. And what you do is you pick what you've got resources to do, maybe one, and you prioritize it, and you do it very well. I would pick SpeechMeet. That's a real easy one to do, and just do it well. Lots of schools do it, but sometimes it doesn't get the investment that it could. Well, yes. In our case, because we have so many other public events at this time, we don't really try and promote the speech meet in the community. You could, but we don't. We promote it to grandparents. We send mailers to grandparents, letting them know when their kid's doing it, and you get grandparents in. Your grandparents and parents, it's much about retention. You know, I get letters from grandparents after they've seen our exordiums that say, I would, you know, I tell my kids all the time, don't ever take them out of that school, right? A lot of times grandparents understand it better than parents because they're in a phase of life where they can appreciate true learning. And you build that equity up with grandparents and with parents, and that's how you keep your numbers up, because retention is the biggest piece of that game. And so that's how we do that. Yes. Right. That's an excellent point. There are speech meets regionally run all over the country. Boise's unique geographically. There isn't a city within another 500 miles from us, so there is no speech meet circle here. But in North Idaho, we got this from Logos. Logos competes in the Spokane District 1. There are speech meets all over. And if you get into competitions, that's where people see your kids at other events, and that really helps. We have 5 minutes, so I'm going to hit the fifth grade Shakespeare. I'm going to explain this. This began in 2002. Fifth and sixth graders have a lot more to offer than we often give them credit for. So we had a teacher who just said, hey, you know what? Shakespeare's kind of boring for fifth graders if they're just reading it out of a book. Let's try acting some of it out. So they started acting it out a little bit, and a couple people liked it. Now, my story on this is I arrived in 2004. I took the job in April. April 19th was the first fifth grade play, or it was actually the third one, but the first one that I had ever seen. I went home to my wife, who had just graciously agreed to let me leave my salaried corporate job to come for less than half the money to this, you know, all that kind of thing that we all go through when we move into the education business. And I told her, hey, hon, we got to go to a fifth grade play tonight. And she groaned. We didn't have any kids in anywhere near those grades. And she said, I didn't know I was signing on for this. So she could take the cut and pay, but the fifth grade play. We went to this thing. We haven't missed, I think we've missed one, and that was we couldn't help it in the 7 years I've been there, because this is the most entertaining play. It's more entertaining than our high school plays. And it's because romantic comedy and Shakespeare or tragedy or any of those things are double the funny with fifth graders, right? They're holding hands like this. But if they do it well, it's quite a scene. You'll see some here in just a second from this year's. But we just, it trains their rhetorical skills. They love Shakespeare. They get physical discipline out of this on how to act on the stage. You got to have somebody who knows how to do drama do this. But they, you know, it's a big deal. This year we did Twelfth Night and Much Ado About Nothing. You're going to see some clips.
I would rather hear my ghost barking and crying than a man sure he loves me. After all, the world of one man will sneak. What sneaker has a long hair, not to Leonardo? He is in love. With who? With Hero, Leonardo's short daughter.
Yay, but you have a toad here, brother.
Are you sure that Benedict loves Beatrice so entirely?
So says the prince in my new trunk floor,
taming my wild heart by his loving hand.
For ultra send out of deserve, and I believe him! Benedict is calling me!
It is a punishment. Too good for them.
Claudio! On the street I will try, just to show you what I've done.
some of the dance. We have a dance program at the school that they go through as part of the dance program. I think you get the point there. I skipped the very end of it. But so the question on what can a small school do? In many ways, small schools are better at this than big ones. We have to contend with 40 kids in this play every year because everybody's got to have a part. If you've got a small school, start with drama, right? You can do a drama with 5 or 6 or 8 kids. You don't need, you know, large numbers. In fact, it's a detriment. And you can do it just as well as we do it. I mean, aside from the painted backdrops and stuff that you may not have resources for, we didn't either when we started in 2002. We had probably 70 kids in the school at the time. But you can do pretty well. We used to do it at a local school's little theater. And so they – did I go down or oh, – there we go. So that one, we draw now about 600 people a year to that particular play. Actually, I think we had 800 this year, 600 or 800, I can't remember. But a good portion of them are from the community. What's happened on this one is that people's home, their friends want to come see it. So all what's happening, because it's been such a quality play, everybody tells their friends, you've got to come see this. And their friends are fifth graders too, and their parents are going, hey, this is a pretty good school. So this is one where we've had some recruiting success coming out of this because we have a reputation in the community and they see what this program is, and people can bring their friends to something that they can actually enjoy. Questions on this one? Yes. Yes, takes quite a bit of classroom time. We take about an hour and a half of classroom time for about 4 weeks. And we suspend Latin and a few other things. So should you do that? Oh, that's evil, right? You don't ever disrupt classroom time. My philosophy on that is learning is a lot more than just what you get out of a book. I think that this program has some of the best learning we do in a year comes out of this program for the fifth graders. You could see how physical the actors were in that. Every bit of that is choreographed. There's no ad lib, no impromptu. They can, every drop, everything is correlated or choreographed. So it's much more important to them people see right on the surface to get kids disciplined and oriented. Yes? We do it ourselves. We have a movie producer parent who helps us out. So we cheat on that one a little bit. But, yes? Depends on the one. The Christmas program, no. This one, no. It's part of the curriculum. They do it in. So mock trial, yeah. You're paid to do mock trial. There's various ways of compensating. It depends on whether it's part of the contract or not. All right, we're out of time, so I'm going to cap this off. And if any of you have questions or want one of these DVDs, we overprinted a few from Christmas. You're welcome to come get one. So just some parting shots. Keep it academic. Keep it proportional. Don't let it over. You need to watch it because these can, fifth grade play and other things, can overrun your program if you're not careful. Coordinate with development. Send mailings to grandparents. Use video to communicate with out-of-area constituents, which is that's why we do so much video. We do have in-house capabilities that we use. I just shortened my answer to that because it would take a long time to describe. But choose things that grandparents can come to. If you have a grandparents' day, put one of these things on that event, and you'll get a lot more people at your grandparents' day. They don't want to come hear you talk about the school. They want to see their kids perform, right? Set long-term goals. It takes a long time to build up. I know I hope it didn't discourage any of you to see some of the levels that these things are at now. We just filmed them this year. We've been at this for 10 years. You would be there too in five if you just wanted to put your, I don't care how small your school is. You can do some of these things that well if you just put your resources into it. And then dream big. When we set up a Christmas concert, I remember talking to the first gal I hired to do the Christmas concert. And she said, you want half the audience to come from the community? That's not going to happen. And I said, well, maybe not. I didn't know. I'd never done it before. But if you do something well enough, you can achieve a lot. And that's what we should be showing in classical Christian education is excellence. It should be obvious in all that we do, and it should certainly be obvious in the performances we do. So that's, I'll just leave that in conclusion up. And now that we're over time, thank you very much for coming. If you have further questions, come on up.